Arm's Length Reporting, for investors who want the whole story. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey, welcome in. Time for KER Politics. We're going to take the first couple of segments of the show, and we're going to talk about the Russian mentality vis-a-vis the Ukraine. Jimmy has done a fair amount of research on this. Frieda did a bit of research on it, but we're going to start out with Jim. Jimmy, what's going on in the Ukraine as far as the Ruskies are concerned?
Okay, so I think it's really important to be objective and to look at this. We've got a lot of comments during the week on the blog about, who favors what. And it has nothing to do with favoritism. It has to do with actually looking at operational objectives on the ground in Ukraine for Russian military targets. And here's some reality checks. They've lost 70, 80, possibly 90 aircraft.
Mm-hmm.
They have lost hundreds of armored vehicles. They have lost what some reports as many, somewhere between 10 and 15,000, potentially more, killed in action, with 15 to 20, maybe more, thousand wounded in action.
Yeah.
They have not tactically taken control of any of their major objectives. Now, this is the reality on the ground. Compare that to, say, the U.S. invasion of Iraq in 2003.
Yeah.
60,000, and remember, the Russians went in with somewhere between 130,000 and 150,000 soldiers against an army of no more than, less than 50,000. So a 3-to-1 advantage with a much larger reserve force, with a much higher percentage of aircraft and armor. So what the United States, when we went into Iraq in 2003, lost a couple of helicopters, a couple of fast-moving aircraft, and less than 10 armored vehicles all the way to Baghdad, with only 60,000 troops moving over 400 miles against an army of 400,000 with tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of reserves and different Fedayeen and other insurgency groups.
Right.
That was in the initial stages of the war. We had total air supremacy within 24 hours. Now, there's a difference between air supremacy and air superiority. Air superiority means you have pretty much at will, you can attack and you control most of the skies. Air supremacy means anything else the enemy flies dies. The Russians right now have some air superiority because of the size and the numbers of their aircraft. They do not have air supremacy. This is a tactical and a military reality. So what you're seeing is Ukrainian forces are inflicting massive casualties, a much higher ratio than the Ukrainian forces are taking. And the Ukrainian forces are definitely taking casualties. There's no question. And they are having a tremendous amount of losses and damage done to their cities, their roads, to their infrastructure, their leadership, and of course, the individuals and the people there. But the comparison for the invading army, for the Russian army, this is not going well for them. And that's just a fact. You cannot ignore that reality. And it's going to be incredibly costly to continue this operation. And I want to remind all the listeners out there, the United States had total air supremacy. We had total firepower supremacy. We had military logistics capabilities. We had a much higher technological capability in Iraq and Afghanistan. 20 years later, we lost both of them. We lost both of them. That means nothing when you're fighting a dedicated insurgent force. And what you see in Ukraine right now is people that are fighting for their territory, for their nation, for their own survival. And it's going to be incredibly hard, objectively, for the Russians to do anything in order to stop this without a massive, massive effort that will be too costly, in my view, for them to sustain.
Give me some idea about longevity, if you would, Jimmy. I You feel basically what you just said is the Russians are probably not going to win this thing under the current conditions. Give me some time frame when perhaps they'll realize that and not justifiably, that's the wrong word to use, and in order, they'll get out with some way that they can save, that Putin can save face. You got a comment on that?
Yeah, so it's a very good question. And I actually, you know, I certainly can't get into Putin's mind. I have, because of my experience as a Russian foreign area officer and experience in the region, living and operating with the Russians and having multiple Russian military officers as not only friends, but people that I had to work with on a regular basis as an attaché, and studying them for decades and being a Russian linguist. That experience, there's an adage, you know, there's a fisherman on the Caspian Sea. It's a kind of a parable for Russian activities. He catches the magic fish. The magic fish says, "Hey, look, let me go, and I'll grant you any wish that you want." And the fisherman looks at the magic fish and says, "Anything that I want, magic fish. Anything you want, except for on one condition. Whatever I give to you, I give to your neighbor twofold." And the fisherman looks. He turns and says, "Okay, poke out my right eye." Do you get the point?
Yeah.
Sometimes they will do something in order to destroy someone else at their own risk and their own cost. And unfortunately, what I'm afraid of is that as Putin feels the pressure not to fail on this operation, he will continue to attempt to put more pressure on the Ukrainian people and the Ukrainian government, and more pressure on the West. Very, you know, what he did with the yesterday on Thursday, the 31st of March, declaring that he would only accept gold or rubles for payment for gas supplies, and he would cut people off in Europe that did not pay them. I think he's attempting to leverage something that in the long run will be very much to his detriment. And those people that believe that he somehow, with his very small, relatively small economy, is going to change the world system, whether you'd like to see it changed or not. And in some ways, I very much would like to see things come back to commodity-based pricing, you know, gold standard, and maybe some of these valuations that make sense. But to think that he's somehow going to force that against the West, I just don't see it being rational. So this could drag on. I mean, to your original question, this could drag on for a period of time with him attempting to put more pressure and costing more lives, more destruction across the board. And in the end, I don't care if he kills Zelensky. I don't care if he takes Kiev. He does not win this battle, even if he takes control of Ukraine. It is going to be an ugly, long-term process. And the people that have lost, almost everyone, every Ukrainian right now is suffering from this, losing family members, having to move, having to run, having to hide from their destruction. They will hate Russians forever, for generations. They will continue. There will be some that will continue to fight no matter how long, no matter how far and how much of a sacrifice against them. And that's a reality in the region. That's just the way it works. The Russians would do the same if it worked the other way, as we saw in World War II.
Yeah. Well, I would make a couple of comments on what you just said. I really agree with everything that you have said. The one comment you made dealing with the potentiality of going back on the gold standard, I like that comment a lot, and I'm glad you brought that up. Economies are basically, if they are not a value-based economy, economies always fail. You cannot just print money, etc., etc. And I think the one good thing that could come out of this is we could end up back on a gold standard. And I've always believed strongly in that. Ladies and gentlemen, time for a little shift. Frida's now going to talk a little bit about the mind of the Russian soldiers. Be right back.
Your weekly fix on finance and investing. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey, welcome back. We're going to talk about Russian soldiers right now, just a little bit for you folks on the blog who are very definitely pretty much seem to be on their side. And I wanted to say that, you know, maybe there's a good point there. So I decided to ask Frida, Dr. Birnbaum, if she could do some research, albeit a little bit quickly, on Russian soldiers. Frida, what's going on?
Well, you know, they have gone through a lot and they're very fatigued. They're hungry. And they don't even want to fight. They really want out of this. They have relatives in Ukraine. They identify with these people. They have similar backgrounds. And the death rates are continuing to climb. So they really feel that they don't have the outlook that's going to be positive for themselves. Mm-hmm. As the rising number of these dead Russian soldiers keep increasing, their will to continue to fight continues to decrease. You know, the Russians have seized 14 tons of food and medicine intended for the people in Ukraine. So it's a tough place right now to feel that you're going anywhere. There have been 150,000 Russian troops that have invaded in Ukraine, and an estimated 30 to 40,000 have been killed or taken prisoner or have been wounded as this continues. And Putin believed that he'd be able to take Kiev in 2 days, and as we know, it's still going on. And he's being told that he's winning where he's not winning. And Russian soldiers are even fleeing. They're running into the woods and they're leaving their vehicles there. They see that they have no chance. And then again, the Russian military has lost 3 generals in the fight, again, according to NATO officials. So Putin is not in the real world, and the destruction is that he's minimizing the amount of soldiers that have been lost and the war itself. And then again, the Ukrainian military helicopters have stuck a fuel depot in Belgorod. The first time Ukrainians struck on Russian soil. So that's a first as well, that Ukrainian is getting stronger and fighting back even more away from Ukraine. But Russian forces have also left the Chernobyl power plant because the radioactive dust they inhaled was likely to cause critical radiation right in their bodies. So things are really getting worse for these Russian soldiers who have to serve, it's compulsory in Russia, for males 18 to 27 years of age. And many of these young Russians of draft age, they're increasingly nervous, I mean, we all know why, about the prospect of being sent to combat. And this is done on an annual spring conscription that aims to round up about 134,000 men for 1 year tour of military duty. And a young man who's 22 years old, he's completing his studies, and he says after he's finished, he's going to have to face this draft. And they are told that they're going to the military exercise, but instead they're really forced to serve in Ukraine. So this is ongoing. For these young men in Russia, the fear of being there, they don't want to be there. They don't know why they're there. Their background is such that it's similar, and some Ukrainians are living in Russia as well. So there's fear on both sides, and they really are feeling more like they're related to each other than they are their worst enemies.
Yeah. Well, I guess the question I have here is, it strikes me on the surface, and I know a lot of our regular listeners and friends of mine are going to totally disagree with me, but it strikes me on the surface from what I'm reading that the Ukrainians are doing nothing but defending themselves, you know, and you have to applaud them for doing that. A lot of our listeners have brought up the fact that, you know, there is a lot of negativity in the Ukraine, political negativity, Nazism, etc., etc. And that is the rationale right now that Putin is using for the military action on the part of the Russians in the Ukraine. Frida, give me an opinion on that one, would you?
That's very difficult because here, as we know, their leader is Jewish. His parents, his grandparents died in the Holocaust.
Yeah.
And here we're in a situation where he's doing this very same thing or similar things, maybe not as bad, but pretty close to it as Hitler did, destroying people who didn't provoke anything and don't know why he's killing children, mm-hmm. why he's killing innocent people.
Right.
And he has no heart at all for a piece of territory.
Yeah.
So, yes, it's good, actually, I feel, that Ukraine is going into Russia now with drones, and they're becoming more aggressive. Yes, we don't want Nazism. We don't want any of that. But we don't want people to be killed for that. There are people who believe that. What are you going to do, kill them?
Yeah.
And then there's going to be other people who believe it anyway. If that's what they want to believe, you know, freedom of speech unless you hurt someone, we have the right to think the way we think. It's sad that religion has to enter in our lives that become warfare.
Yeah.
It's very sad that we are so similar, and yet we have to kill each other because we grew up in different ways. So no, I don't think that it's fair to say that because there's possibly Nazis going on in Ukraine, there's Nazis everywhere. Let's not kid ourselves. Everywhere we live, there are people that hate other people. Hatred is ugly. It's toxic. Jews are very easy to hate. I don't know why. I'm Jewish, but maybe there are reasons about me. I don't know. I'm hated. Some of you, the people that write to you, they hate me easily. But in reality, we really have to see what is going on behind all this. They're excuses. They're not even real. And it's so sad that people believe it.
Yeah.
Putin has a mission. He wants to conquer. He wants to be boss. He wants to be king. He wants to take Ukraine. And then if he does well, guess what? He's going to take another country, maybe Poland next. He's going to keep going, this guy, unless he's stopped. And he has to be stopped somehow. His ego is at stake. We have to be careful with what that means. We have to make him feel that he's winning when he's not, and save face and tell him how well he did, because he's a little bit, you know, off the wall here. But with that in mind, the only way to stop this is to make Putin feel that he's winning. And, you know, as I always say, it's not if you're right or wrong, but it's the effect that counts. And we have to be very effective with Putin.
You know, Frieda, that's one of the wisest things that I've heard you say, and I've known you for about 6 or 7 years. Now, that's an incredibly, incredibly wise statement. I read this morning, and this is totally off the wall, and I may be talking about it later in the show, but there's a pretty good possibility that Putin may have thyroid cancer right now. Just what I saw today in some of my wire services, whether or not that's true, I don't know. But Frieda, let me just say one thing. It's always a pleasure to get your opinion, because your opinion is shared by many, many people, and I appreciate that.
To find out more about today's guests, visit us on the web at www.kereport.com. You're listening to the Corlin Economics Report. We'll be back in a moment. Providing unique reporting on markets and companies since 1990. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey, welcome back. Hope you guys enjoyed the top of the hour news. Back with Jimmy. We're going to talk in this particular segment about a couple of things. What's going to happen to the world economy if, in fact, Russia, for all practical purposes, shuts off the gas supply, which I don't think is going to happen? Jimmy, let's get your comment first, and then I'll jump in.
Yeah, so the 31st of March, Vladimir Putin announced that he'd only take gold and rubles for oil or for gas supplies to Europe. And of course, as you know, most everybody has learned, the Germans already knew, but about 70% of their energy supplies come from Russia, 60-70%. So that's a huge impact for them. They've made a declared statement already, the Germans, that they will move away from the Russian dependency. That is something that Donald Trump had actually reprimanded not only the Germans, but NATO in general for back in 2017 and 2018 rather significantly. He made a very, very important warning that this could put Europe at a very huge risk against a potential enemy.
Yeah.
So what we're seeing now is that coming to fruition. Russia is threatening. I think it's a, if in fact they do stop delivery of gas, they have to continue to sell to get the revenues to support their operations and continue to operate their government. That would be very challenging to do. They do have Chinese and Indian purchases that are committed right now. So we'll see how that works. I don't know how long those countries would be able to use hard currency, being gold, or if it would be in credits. But the impact will certainly increase inflation in the price of fuels. And of course, as you see the price inflationary pressure on energy, that affects, you know, petroleum and gas, that affects every aspect of our lives. So we could see a significant increase over the next few months of not only prices in energy and gas and fuel, but also in all the products that are produced and all the transportation costs that are associated with that. And that comes on top of a supply chain crisis, that comes on top of, you know, very, very rapid inflation because of this massive influx of dollars pumped out by the Fed and by the Biden administration for COVID response. You know, in spite of some of the hype that there is a reduction in the deficit, that's only because the Biden plan didn't go through. We are facing a very serious and very difficult summer, and a lot of people, as President Biden said publicly, that you may see food shortages, you may see more supply shortages, you're going to see increases in oil prices and gas prices. Now, he did announce that he would pump a million barrels of oil a day from the national stockpile, the emergency reserve stockpile, into the economy over the next 8 months, which actually brings our overall expenditures from the national stockpile, oil stockpile, the energy stockpile, that takes about 40% to 50%, given this large amount, which could equate to as much as of 180 million barrels, and what he's previously done is 30 million barrels. That's significantly reducing the national stockpile, which is designed specifically in case of global war. And we are facing the potential for global war. It makes absolutely no sense what's happening at all now, unless you look at it from a Green New Deal perspective, where they
Go ahead. Let me jump in on this Green New Deal thing. That's not going to last forever, and it's not going to work forever. I mean, renewable energy sources, windmills, et cetera, number one, it's going to take a lot of time to ramp it up, and I firmly am convinced that renewable energy sources it's simply too big a change to make overnight. You know, you're always going to, I mean, Mercedes-Benz, for example, announced that within 6 or 7 years, all of their cars will be electric. Well, let me tell you, the value of the conventional gas Mercedes and BMW, for that matter, is going to scream higher and higher and higher, because that change cannot, you can make all your cars electric within 6 or 7 years, but the fact of the matter is the value of the conventional cars is going to scream to the moon. There's no question about that. I don't think renewables are going to work. I think what's going to happen in the United States under Trump was pretty oil self-sufficient. Now, I don't know how long, and I shouldn't have brought this up without knowing this, but I don't know how long that self-sufficient can continue. Self-sufficiency can continue. My guess is that it can continue for quite a while. So much for shutting down the pipeline, President Biden. so much for reducing drilling, so much, et cetera, for all your great green energy plans. They cannot occur overnight. They will not happen overnight. And I would believe that they will never happen in their entirety. Any comments on that, Jim?
Yeah, so I think we actually use estimated about 20 million barrels of oil a day in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
Putting 1 million barrels a day back into the system for 6 months takes about half of our overall. That's about 180 million barrels. That's, you know, we're at about 400 to 500 million barrels in the national stockpile.
Right.
That lasts us maybe a year at most.
Yeah.
If we don't significantly increase production and reduce the pricing because of that, we are facing a very serious problem. Now, at 1 million barrels a day added into the stockpile, that only dropped, I think it dropped the price of oil in the commodities market less than about 5% overall.
Yeah.
And it's only about a 5% change in price of gas at the pump. So let's say, you know, at a, I mean, that's a 25 cent drop from a $5 a gallon. If you're in California, you know, that's 30 cents off of your $7 a gallon gas.
Exactly.
35 cents off your $7
exactly.
a gallon. That's not doing anything for us when you've got an inflation rate last month at year over year at 7.9%. And we can expect to see that significantly increase as we actually face the reality of what's happened over the last 30 days. So this is a very, very difficult time. And I think what's happening is the boneheads in the current U.S. administration are trying to force green energy policies on people and do exactly what you say can't be done, make that happen overnight. I think they're trying to politically take advantage of it to appease a certain segment of the population and these people that believe that the world's coming to an end. I think this is a catastrophic mistake for national security and a catastrophic mistake for them politically in the short term, because people are beginning to get fed up when they're seeing through it.
Well, there's a question in my mind whatsoever that people are not getting fed up. Of course they're getting fed up. A lot of interesting things are happening politically that is getting people to really look in another direction. A lot of things are happening socially, et cetera, et cetera. I think we're going to see an awful lot of changes, Jimmy, in the very near future. By the way, I am going to post an article today by a fellow who writes for, he's a freelance writer, but he's very, very good. His name is Jose Nino. He's going to be on the program on Monday. Hopefully Jimmy can join me. He wrote a very, very interesting article that is germane to what we're talking about right now. It's entitled, "The Progressive Liberal Democracy Has Failed. Radical Decentralization is the Answer." And I agree with that 100%. Stick around. Jim and I are going to be right back after the commercial. Welcome back here to Wrap Up KER Politics. We're going to go back to what we're good at. We're good at everything, so we're going to go back to everything. We're going to talk about the political situation domestically in America. Let's start out with Hunter Biden. You know, it would appear from what the information that I'm getting from my wire sources that there is perhaps a little bit better than a 50% chance that Mr. Biden Jr. will be doing some jail time. Any comments on that, Jimmy?
Well, if the information that is actually publicly known is acted upon by the Department of Justice, then it's guaranteed he'll be spending some time behind bars. But of course, most of us now have limited faith in the justice system to prosecute anybody in this administration or any liberal Democratic person. But basically, there are numerous areas of tax fraud, of actual, you know, the open drug use, potential with their videotape of, minor potential minors in illicit positions with Hunter Biden. And then, of course, the relationships and the funding from U.S. enemies, Chinese Communist Party, as well as, the corruption in Burisma and Ukraine. So basically, it seems to me that this you're starting to see the mainstream press, NBC and CBS, actually report accurately on it. With that, it means that somebody on the left has said, okay, he's going to be the sacrificial lamb to try to protect somebody. And my guess is they're going to use him to protect Biden in some way and say, oh, it was all his fault. And he was trading on his dad's name. That's my prediction.
You know, I'm not so sure about that. Now, one thing I have noticed is that Jen Psaki, for example, is leaving the confines of the Oval Office as a spokesperson, and she's going to MSNBC. That just came across the wires a little bit ago today, Friday. I wonder what her motive is, because she actually is doing a pretty good job as a presidential spokesman, in the sense that she's not letting anything necessarily slip through her fingers that would be detrimental to President Biden. Now, I'm just wondering if she wasn't having a conversation with somebody at one point in time, and that somebody said, it's really probably time for you to change locations, for lack of better terms. What do you think, Jimmy?
I think Jen Psaki is seeing the writing on the wall. This is a sinking ship, and she wants to get off it while she still can and do whatever she can to take care of herself.
Right.
Jen Psaki is probably the most unbelievable, though very dedicated, White House press secretary that I've seen in my life. But she does do a good job at trying to stay on top of the, on the message, and trying to control the message there. But I think that message is actually beginning to be clear, that most people don't accept it. And the problem, I think, with the Biden regime, the Biden administration, is how they'll fill the gaps as the ship continues to sink. We've seen it happen with Kamala Harris's staff, where numerous people have left, and she has not done a better job. We saw it with the effort to reshape Joe Biden, to rebrand him. That failed miserably at the first of the year with the the State of the Union address.
Yeah.
And this continues to fail. So it'll be interesting to see what comes out of the White House, and who will be able to hold their tongue without just flat out lying.
Right.
And that's what we see quite a bit anymore these days.
You know, that's an interesting comment, and I want to hear what you have to say about this. I know that you read all of the comments as I do, but I think, and unfortunately I don't have the comments open in front of me, but if I'm not mistaken, either Out of the Box Jerry or CFS 2000, or perhaps...
It doesn't matter who,
but the fact of the matter is, one of our very active listeners sent a link to a comment that Nancy Pelosi just said within the last couple of days. She's recorded on video as saying, if the Democrats lose the election, or they don't look good this year, that's going to be the end of democracy as we know it. Boy, I have to tell you, anybody who believes that needs to listen to what Jose Nino has to say with Jimmy and I on Monday. Jimmy, what are your comments about Pelosi's inane comment?
You know, this has been a tremendously well-orchestrated talking point from the Democrats, that somehow Donald Trump was the person that was taking away democracy. Well, they actually eroded democracy. The only democracy that Nancy Pelosi and the Democratic leadership want is a democracy that follows exactly their line of thinking.
Exactly.
And they will crush anybody, and they are doing a very good effort using the media, corrupt corporate media, in order to intimidate, to silence, to close off debate, to protect their very far extreme left positions. And what they're attempting to do, in my view, is mobilize their base to stand up and say, you know, we've got to protect everybody. We've got to protect transgender children, you know, all three of them in the United States. Okay, I don't know how many there are, but I know that a few years ago, it was very small. And I know that the more they talk about it, they're creating more problems. They're going to talk about, you know, the voter ID is being, you know, keeping people from voting because they can't get IDs. How racist is that to say that a minority in the United States can't get a voter ID? To me, that's saying, oh, you're incapable of doing what everybody must do in order to use a credit card or to drive a car or to do anything. I think that's ridiculous. They're doing whatever they can. They're using whatever tools they can to shape a message that scares people on the left, on the extreme left, into action. And that's what we saw in 2020 when they burned and looted 200 cities for over $2 billion worth of damage in the United States over the basically the fraudulent protests.
Well, I got to tell you, I want to read you guys the last sentence of Jose Nino's article. And the last sentence goes right along with what Jimmy and I have been talking about for years. Quote, radical decentralization will be the lighthouse for Western countries that have lost their way. Whether these countries correct course remains to be seen. I guess what I would ask you, Jimmy, we got a couple minutes here left here. What I would ask you is, do you think America is going to correct course?
So I do believe if there's legitimacy and the different legislatures actually enforce voting rights standards and actually protect the ballots, that you will see what we saw in Virginia, where parents were fed up with what was happening in the schools in Virginia.
Right.
When they're tired of the woke policies, you'll see a tremendous backlash. And the polling, all indicators right now, it should be significant. The left is not willing to accommodate. They're not willing to recorrect their course to go back towards the middle. And I think if they continue on this, the only way they can succeed is through authoritarian means or voter fraud. And I think they're going to attempt both. And I think it's going to fall on deaf ears. I think Nancy Pelosi and her comments right now are basically mute. Most people look at her as just an old woman that's been there way too long. They look at Joe Biden. Look, black Americans a year ago, mid-80s, supported Joe Biden in his policies. Now it's in the mid-50s. That's a 30-point drop.
Right.
That undermines Democratic voting in every major urban area, and that's their key to control of political entities in the United States. If they lose that vote, and look at what's happening with Hispanics are moving very rapidly towards Republicans,
yeah,
as well as independents. They're tired of what's happening. Many Democrats are saying, I will never vote Democrat again. So unless they control the vote, unless they use authoritarian methods to silence it and use some other COVID-19, COVID-22, or whatever, the next crisis, or maybe even this Ukraine war, Third World War, I think they're going to be out of power.
I think that we only got about 20 seconds here, so let me leave our listeners with this thought. I think that's going to get the Democrats out of power, actually, is the Ukraine war. America has done virtually nothing as a world leader, which they should have done, and they have absolutely, totally failed.
The Corlin Economics Report is produced for A.B. Corlin and Associates. Opinions expressed on this program are intended solely for the entertainment of our listeners, do not constitute investment advice, and are not necessarily those of this network, radio station, or our sponsors. Find out more about this program and today's guests by visiting www.kereport.com. For Al Corlin, this is Colleen Robbins. Join us again next week for the Corlin Economics Report.